Fur bear trapping. Is Keith, are you with us? I'm mute, Keith.
Yes, I am. Can you hear me?
Yes, welcome.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Keith Fisk, I'm a program administrator with Game Fish and Parks. Good afternoon, members of the commission and Secretary Roebling. I'm happy to be here today in front of you for a few minutes to talk about fur bear management and trapping regulations here in South Dakota. So if you would turn your attention to, if you're following along on your laptops, it looks like it's page 95 out of 120, the beaver trapping and hunting season. Just for your folks' information, this is a two-year recommendation. So for the next 2 years, currently in South Dakota, we have a number of different beaver seasons. In eastern South Dakota, currently that season starts on November 1st and runs through April 30th. West of the Missouri River, outside of the Black Hills, it's year-round. And then inside the Black Hills, has some different season dates on Forest Service property as well as private lands. Due to the fact that the Forest Service does consider the beaver as an indicator species. So that's the reason for those season dates inside the Black Hills. What we have for recommended changes from last year here before you folks today is to modify that season in eastern South Dakota to have it align with western South Dakota. So what we're recommending is to have a year-round beaver season on the prairies in eastern South Dakota to, again, align it to western South Dakota. Landowners in eastern South Dakota have the same types of damage concerns that folks in western South Dakota have. And the beaver harvest that we would be looking at after April 30th during the summer months, if this was to pass, would be pretty minimal. Not a lot of people are willing to don hip waders and fight the mosquitoes in June or July for a beaver that really doesn't have any value, but it certainly would have some value to landowners to be able to remove those critters if they've flooded out a cornfield or damaging a stock dam, some of those types of things. So with that, that is our recommended change, and I would ask for your favorable approval.
Thank you. Questions from the commission? Nicely done. Seek a motion for approval. There's been a motion by Whitmire, seconded by Beeves. Any discussion on the motion? Seeing none. All in favor indicate by saying aye. Any opposed? Motion carries. Thanks, Keith.
Excellent. Commissioner, if I could continue, I've got about five other action sheets here.
Please do.
Number 97 in your booklet, the chapter that deals with trapping prohibitions. So currently in rule, there is a complex rule called the water set rule, which details the types of traps that can be set within 30 feet of water prior to the start of most trapping seasons, which start on November 1st. So we're primarily talking about the month of October. And currently in rule, only raccoon-specific type traps and then also beaver traps, body grip beaver traps, can be set during that time frame. And that rule is also really in place to limit some of the conflict that we've seen over the years on public lands and public road right-of-ways for people that want to try to get out prior to the season, set a bunch of equipment, and basically claim their spot. And obviously during fur markets that have some significant value, that can be a pretty confrontational times for some folks. So back in 2009, we initiated this rule. So basically on the start of the trapping season, which again starts on November 1st, everybody has the same opportunity, and it's fair for everybody to go out there and find those trapping locations. And With the change that you folks just made, proposed change, I should say, to that beaver season, we would like to extend the use of body grip traps for beaver in eastern South Dakota to, again, allow those folks to take beaver in eastern South Dakota with those body grip, or they're commonly referred to or called conibear traps, those types of traps. And then also a second change there is that there was an error a number of years ago that said that traps could be used or prohibited, through August 31st, and it should be April 30th. So really no change there other than just a date cleanup. But so we would like to allow the use of body grip traps in eastern South Dakota and then clean up that date error. With that, I'd be happy to answer any questions and would ask for your favorable approval.
Thank you, Keith. Any questions? If not, I'd see the motion to approve. The motion in a second. Any discussion on the motion? Seeing none. Commissioner Spring. Oh, okay. All in favor, indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries. Yana Hopstreet, Keith.
Excellent. Page number 99. The skunk, opossum, jackrabbit, fox, raccoon, and badger season. Again, this is a two-year recommendation. Flexible dates. It's year-round statewide, and we have no recommended changes. So if this moves forward, it doesn't require a vote or anything like that. So it would just be status quo here for the next 2 years, but I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Any questions? I don't see any. Thank you.
All right. Page 101 in your booklet, the mink, weasel, and muskrat hunting and trapping seasons. Again, this is a two-year recommendation. The mink and the weasel seasons run every year from November 1st through January 31st. And no changes before you here today, but I would be happy to answer any questions if you have them.
Any questions? None here.
All right. We got a couple more. The muskrat hunting season. This administrative rule was actually put in place back in 2013 after the legislature dealt with a number of issues with muskrats and passed some legislation which granted you folks the authority to create this season. And this season runs from April 1st through August 31st, and it's exclusively for landowners, county and township highway officials, those folks that are looking to reduce muskrats that are causing damage to roads, dams, those types of things. It's really worked well since the time that it's been in place. It's allowed those folks to be able to protect that type of infrastructure. And we don't have any recommended changes for you here today, but I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Keep going. Thank you.
All right. Last up that we have is page 106, the river otter hunting and trapping season. And before I go through that proposal, we do have a brief update and summary from last year's trapping season from Alex Solom. He's a wildlife biologist over in Huron that took on this additional responsibility here in the past 6 to 9 months with looking at river otters and helping with the check-in process as well as developing some monitoring techniques. Alex has done a really good job, and I believe he's on the line here today with a brief presentation to review some of those details and monitoring efforts. So with that, Alex, I'll turn it over to you here.
Thank you, Keith. Good afternoon, Commissioners. Secretary Roebling, I believe I sent a copy of the PowerPoint to Chris if you wanted to pull that up. Otherwise, I can also share my screen, too, whatever's easiest.
We'll just have you co-host, Al.
Okay. All right. Can everybody see my screen? Oh, there we go. Oh, this is terrible. Can everybody see it now?
No, sir.
All right. I probably should select which one I'd like to see. All right. What about that? Nope.
Now we got it.
Now you got it? All right. You see the overview of it? All right. Yeah, last year, can everybody hear me okay as well?
Yes.
All right. So last year was our kind of inaugural season for the 2020 River Otter season. I'm here today, like Keith mentioned, I'm a wildlife biologist out of the Huron office. Traditionally upland game, but we were handed River Otters last fall, just kind of our proximity to them. Gave Travis and I both a unique opportunity to kind of delve into something that we weren't really used to. And it's been a pretty interesting learning curve. I'm glad the opportunity. So I'll kind of dive right in. Last year's season structure, we had a harvest limit of 15 otters. Our trapping season started November 1st. You needed a fur bearer license for this, and you were allowed one river otter per license holder per season. One of the requirements for the season is there was a 24-hour reporting period. So once you trapped your otter, you had 24 hours to report it. And then from there forth, they called a river otter, a hotline basically, that directed right to me where I would record some preliminary information, take down the trapper's name and number, and we'd give them the opportunity to check in to five locations in eastern South Dakota, where we take some general catch per unit effort information, how many traps they put out, you know, whether or not they're actually targeting otters, how many days it took, all that sort of stuff. And that gave in the administrative rule, they gave the person 5 days to check in that carcass and then receive a CITES tag for their raw pelt. The season didn't last very long. Again, it started on November 1st, but the 15th otter was actually harvested on November 6th. And then after a 24-hour reporting period, it officially ended November 7th. And you can see the open counties that it was available there. Here's kind of a overview of where the harvest actually took place. We had one in Brookings County, two in Minnehaha, eight in Moody, one in Grant, one in Roberts, and two in Hamlin County. So majority of them were taken along the Big Sioux River, which isn't really that surprising considering we knew we had otters there and where the initial release was for reintroducing them back into the state. So I'll kind of get into a little bit of the nuts and bolts of the actual information that we've gathered. You can see here kind of when the actual otters were harvested. We tended to pick up a few more otters towards the end of the designated season that we have there, which isn't super surprising. The longer you can have a trap out and soaking, the more opportunity that you have to actually catch an otter. Kind of some of the demographic information that we have there is there was 6 females caught and 9 males caught. One of the interesting things is we wanted to know whether people were actually targeting otters. So 11 out of the 15 otters that were actually taken during this season, people were actually going for them. We did have a couple incidentals. One, ironically, was in a really small mink trap. The guy was pretty surprised when he called me. And then, not too surprising, we did have three catches where guys were targeting beavers. Usually, otters and beavers go hand in hand. They share very similar habitat, and they kind of, live together quite a bit. Have that type of relationship. Just kind of some of the information. Most folks set about 10 traps that were specifically targeted for river otters. And then the average trap nights were about 27.1. So that's the number of traps times the number of nights that they actually had those traps set out. So that kind of gives us a little bit idea of catch per unit effort. It's something to that we can compare from one state to the next and then from one year to the next. And it kind of gives, and some of the literature suggests that in like the lightly trapped populations, this catch per unit effort kind of gives you a little bit of an idea of how the population's doing. You can track that over time. The last time I presented this, I believe, was in December, and this was right after the season completed. We hadn't gone through our necropsies yet. So this is when we actually take the carcass that the individual dropped off. Again, they get to keep their pelt if they choose to. And then what we do is we take some demographic data, length, weight, sex, look at reproduction, and all that sort of stuff. But we also take the canines from these individuals, and we send them to Matson's laboratory. And what they do is they do a cementum annuli aging. procedure, and they send the information back to us. So this is the age structure, the age classes that we have for just the harvested individuals. You can see there we have five individuals that were age zero or basically young of the year, five individuals that were yearlings, and then the rest of the five make up what we consider an adult class. And looking at this information, it's really kind of nice to see. You know, it indicates that there's production out there, that we do have young available, or young is actually out on the landscape. It's not too surprising. Generally, young are more easily trapped, more susceptible to trapping. But we do see a trend of having some older otters in there. So, it shows that, you know, the survivability of these critters, is good, you know, especially having two individuals that were at least, or 6 years, 6 years of age or at least 5 years or older. So what's next? So we've had plenty of discussions on how to, you know, properly manage the species, get an idea of, you know, what we should do for them. One of the main takeaways that we've had with the discussions and meetings from, you know, a lot of surrounding states and other experts is, river otters are extremely difficult to monitor. They're really not conducive to, you know, your normal monitoring efforts, i.e., you know, radio marking, roadside counts, you know, and this is basically due to its secretive nature and where they're located. What we've kind of, one of the main things that, or the main themes that we've had with discussing this with people from surrounding states and other experts and other researchers is that you can't come to the table with just one idea for monitoring. You have to use a lot of tools, and that will give you kind of a broad picture of how the critter is doing, and I'll be going through those tools that we're proposing to use this year. One of the main proposals that we're going to be, or one of the main things that we're going to be focusing on for sampling, and our primary method is going to be non-invasive genetic sampling. This is going to take place within the management area, so within the counties that are open to the harvest of river otters, because, you know, obviously with a new season, we're interested in knowing how, you know, many critters are out there, or, you know, some sort of index to how many critters are out there. We're going to focus our sampling on, you know, essentially eastern South Dakota, but five of the primary river systems, the Vermilion, the James, the Big Sioux, the Whetstone, and we might expand that out into other areas as well. But we have proposed this in kind of a 5-year plan. One of the main takeaways about this is that it's going to take some time. It's going to take some time to get a handle on. We're focusing on a pilot year in 2021, and that's going to be actually coming up in September and October, where we're going to try to develop some proper methodology, kind of test out some ideas we have for collecting this information and making sure that what we're collecting will be useful in the long run. We're hoping, you know, develop some sort of index of abundance, and we're also discussing what else we can do with the data, and, you know, whether it be capture recapture events, occupancy modeling, all that sort of stuff. But, you know, kind of the one thing is this year in particular, we just wanted to focus in on how can we fine-tune and kind of get all the headaches out of the way to make sure that data collection is seamless, or is as seamless as it can be, working with critters and out in the field and all that sort of stuff. So that, again, will be our primary method. Our secondary method is something that we have been doing for at least the last 20 years or so, and that's to continue doing necropsies and canine aging on available carcasses that we get, whether they be incidental takes that the trapper has to surrender because it's outside of the designated season or the harvest limit has been reached or stuff like that, along with the carcasses that are taken or given by the fur bearer or by the license holder from the harvested individuals. Again, that gives us a good idea of sex ratios in the population, current age structure of the population, some more general morphological data, you know, diets, that sort of stuff, just to kind of give us a little bit more information on how they're doing, you know, body condition, that sort of stuff. And again, we're gonna continue taking down reports of sightings, signs, and other incidental harvests. You know, having these types of metrics also kind of relates to abundance on the landscape. If we see an increase in sighting signs and that sort of stuff, it, you know, generally speaking, we're hoping that kind of we can use that as an index to how we think the population's going. So, and kind of one of the other things that we're going to be doing with this canine aging is we should be able to backdate individuals that are from their harvest date back into the population to determine kind of how many individuals were, you know, 5 or 6 years ago, taken 5 or 6 years ago based on their age. So if you harvest an otter this year that was 6 years of age, we know it was leased in our system roughly in our system for probably 6 years. So we can add up those individuals based on their age and kind of come up with a minimum estimate at age of harvest. And with that, I know it's kind of quick and dirty, but I can take any questions that you guys might have.
You did a good job putting that all together. I think that, you know, we're going to look at this for, remind me, how many years we're going to take a look at this before we feel we have a better population estimate?
We haven't come to the conclusion that we're going to get, you know, full-blown population estimate. That's one thing that we're still discussing. Where the proposed sampling that we're going to be doing is 5 years. So we'll be able to essentially look at data on a yearly basis. Again, this year we might not get, the best index to abundance or abundance estimate or anything like that, just because we're really just going to focus on how the heck we can do this and how we can do it properly and make sure it's efficient and all that sort of stuff. But the proposed monitoring for the genetic sampling will be 5 years.
Well, and are we going to set the number for the season at our July meeting? Is that the intent?
Mr. Chair, Keith Fisk here. So the proposal that's in front of you folks right now, page 106, that recommendation is just for this next year. So as instructed from previous discussions with the commission, we wanted to be a little more conservative with this proposal and just take it a year at a time. And just as a reminder for folks too, we just delisted this species here less than a year ago. So we really feel that, in order for us to get our feet underneath us, give us a chance to hopefully develop some trend data and learn more about this important fur bearer, we'll just plug along here at a conservative harvest limit of 15 and kind of take it a year at a time here with hopefully, like Alex said, after, if our field season goes as well as we hope it goes, and we learn a lot from those DNA samples, it would give us and you folks some comfort potentially in the future with making some slight adjustments one way or the other with the overall harvest limit. But for right now, it would be the same exact season structure as last year.
Answer me this. How many people were available in the 2020 season?
I'm sorry, Mr. Chair, I couldn't hear that. Could you say that again?
How long did the season was it proposed to take? Had we not hit 15 river otters, how long did trappers have the opportunity? Is it 30 days, is it 60 days?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, it would have ran from November 1st through December 31st, so essentially 2 months or 60 days.
It took 6 days to fill it?
That's correct.
I mean, I would think that tells me that if it took 6 days out of a possible 60, 10% of the total season opportunity to fill it, that I think we're being more than conservative, and I can say that because I've got them in my backyard. And I'd asked before that we increase that number, and I guess maybe somebody missed a memo on that.
Well, Mr. Chair, the commission always has the latitude to make adjustments to the department's recommendation. One thing I think it's important to consider is that, this is a brand new fur bearer here in South Dakota. There's a lot of excitement surrounding it. You know, one thing that we don't have a real good handle on is we know that there's a lot of trapping pressure right away when the season opens. And, because there's other species that those folks are targeting. And, I just don't want to portray the picture, I guess, that, it only took 6 days when we do have, that's when the bulk of our fur harvesting does occur is right away at the season. So just that's something else to consider, I guess.
Yeah, the trapping community that I've had a lot of contact with is, they're appreciative, certainly, that we allowed that last year. And, you know, part of our 3Rs initiative is the reactivation. And I talked to a guy that hadn't trapped in 30 years that only bought another trapping license for that. What type of, do we have the data that shows how many new licenses or fur bearer licenses that we sold that were specifically targeting river otters?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, we're not able to break that out to how many additional licenses were sold specifically for people that wanted to potentially trap a river otter. But we did see a nice bump in our overall fur bearer license sales. But we really don't know the reason behind that. I mean, it could have been a number of different factors with prices with some of the other fur bearers or additional opportunities with some of those others, but we can't parse that out.
Keith, what else do you have today? Because I'm going to ask that we hold off on action for this until I have an opportunity to talk to some staff, and then we can pick it up again tomorrow.
Sure, Mr. Chair. Nope, that's all I have. So if you want to press pause on that and talk a little bit about it more this evening and come back tomorrow, that's certainly fine.
That'd be great. Thank you. Appreciate all your time today. Great information.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Is that all we